You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation, brought to you by Go Wild. Go Wild is the fastest growing outdoor themed social media app on the market. All you have to do is go to wherever you download your apps and download Go Wild. And for more information, you can visit timetogowild.com.
Welcome to the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast, brought to you by Exodus Trail Cameras, the number one podcast for bow hunting product information and hunting stories from across the nation. And now, here's your nine-fingered host, Dan Johnson.
All right, happy Monday, everybody, and welcome back to the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast brought to you by Exodus Trail Cameras. If you haven't already, go check out exodusoutdoorgear.com and buy a trail camera. Discount code Nine Fingers, that's the number nine, followed by the word fingers, and you'll receive $20 off of your trail camera purchase. And here's my pencil. Bounce it on my desk. Dude, I don't know what it is. I'm having a tough season so far, and I haven't hunted a lot, so I really haven't had a lot of tree stand time, but I've checked my trail cameras a lot, and I don't mean like invasive types of checks. If they have been, it's because I've hunted those locations. I do not have the deer on my property this year that I have had in the past, and what makes me worried this year as opposed to other years is, yes, I may have had other years where there were not big deer showing up or mature bucks that are my target bucks, let's say, showing up. It's just that those deer were still nocturnal. The big bucks were nocturnal, which means, you know, the closer it gets to the rut, the more likely they are to show themselves. But this year, I don't have any of those types of deer on trail camera. I have one buck who, and this is no joke, one buck, two-year-old, 120-inch eight-pointer. That is what I have on trail camera. All my mature bucks are gone. And I'm just hoping they're on neighboring properties and decide to show back up here pretty soon. But I have no idea what's going to happen in the next couple weeks. I just have to have faith that the rut is going to bring out the big boys. And so therefore, I have something to chase. The last two or three trail camera pulls have been, you know, less than desired, so to speak. So whatever, it's the rut's coming, and my rut starts on Friday. My vacation starts on Friday of this week, and I'm going to be taking the kids down to my mom's because my wife's got to work. I'm going to be starting the grind, you know, so they say, November 2nd through however long it takes me. I got 2 weeks of vacation, and I'm just going to start going and going and going and going until, hunt my stands, you know, get the process going, locate a deer on trail camera, you know, put it on a move. Or if I see something from the sand, be as mobile as possible to put myself in the right possible position. And that is how I typically hunt. And in the past, I've been successful doing it that way. This year, I don't know what I want yet. That changes. If I could sit here and tell you, hey, I'm only going to shoot a four-year-old that's X inches or bigger, and that's not always the case. I'm going to shoot a deer that makes me happy, and that could be anything at the moment. I'm kind of one of those guys who, if it makes me feel good in the moment, I'm going to do it. And if it doesn't, well, it doesn't. And I keep going. So that's kind of a breakdown of how I'm going to approach this upcoming season. One thing that just popped into my head that I think may be part of the reason I'm not seeing the big mature bucks is we've had an infestation of coyotes. That might have something to do with it. But like the quantity of deer is not low. The coyotes are higher, but it doesn't seem like they're spooking them. We had high water, and we have crops that are still in the around in the area, in the fields. So hopefully over this week and early next week, those start getting out. Hopefully we get a big dump of cold weather and get some weather to come through, chill everything out, and that's the goal for this. That's my rut goal anyway. So Today's podcast, we're going to be talking with a gentleman, Nate Thomas. And Nate harvested his biggest buck to date, and he jumped on the podcast to share that story. He lost a property, and he was shitting his pants before the season even started because he didn't know if he was going to have a place to hunt. So with a little luck and knowing the right people, he was able to get on a piece of property that his buddy helped him with. And I guess the sun shined on him because it was loaded with some really good deer, and he killed his number one hit list buck from that property. And that's what today's podcast is about. So if you lost property, don't give up, knock on doors, do whatever you have to do, hunt public, because I can't imagine a world, because I know someday I'm going to lose a property, right? And the goal is A, to have a backup ready, or B, start knocking on doors, hunt public, whatever it is. Just keep grinding. I've talked too much, but before we get into today's podcast, guys, I don't even know what to say. Exodus Trail Cameras has been they helped me basically fund this podcast. And what I mean by that is they were one of the first partners to jump on board. So I owe them a lot from that standpoint, and hopefully that the attention that I've brought them is a two-way street. And at the same time, they make a very high quality trail camera. And I say this every single time, but their trail cameras work and they do what they're supposed to do, and that is take pictures. In the past, I have had trail cameras not work. They did not take pictures after I turned them on. It should be simple. Format the card, turn on the trail camera, and then it should take pictures. In the past, I've had some trail cameras that did not do that. I have yet, this is like 3 years now, 4 years, that I've been using Exodus, 3 years, Exodus trail cameras, and no problems. Not one problem. That, you know, I have had the, hey, you forgot to turn it to the on position. That's my fault. But when I set it up properly, they don't fail. They have a 5-year theft warranty. And I know I'm talking a lot about them, but I really appreciate the company. So their warranty is if someone steals your trail camera, all you have to do is get a hold of them and they'll sell you another one for half price or something like that. Don't quote me on that. I should know that. But and from a customer service standpoint, if you have problems, you can call them, and if they don't answer, they will return your call, or you text them and they will return your call. I swear to God, they will help you out. So if you want to find out more about an Exodus trail camera, you need to visit exodusoutdoorgear.com and take a look at their trail cameras. They have two right now. They have the Lift and the Trek, and they're high quality. Both of them are. One is a little lower of a price point than the Trek is a lower price point than the Lift, but what I'm getting at is it's a high quality camera run by some high quality people. And if you do decide to buy a trail camera, I already said this, Exodus trail cameras, you need to enter the discount code 9Fingers. That's the number 9 followed by the word fingers. I've talked too much. We've whored out. We've paid the bills. Let's get into today's, I guess, Big Buck Profile podcast with Nate Thomas. All right, on the phone with me right now, Mr. Nate Thomas. How you doing, man?
Good. How are you doing, Dan?
I'm doing good. And as we start to do more of these Big Buck Profile podcasts, I always ask the question, because how many days ago was it from the time we're recording this to when you shot this buck?
So I guess it would be 8 days ago. He was shot on October 16th. Last Tuesday.
Right in the middle of the October lull.
Yep.
Oh man, that lull. You shouldn't have even been hunting then.
I actually wasn't supposed to hunt that day at all. So
you got lucky.
Came together. Yep.
Well, we talked a little bit about this through some emails, through a little conversation before we started recording this particular podcast, and this is a pretty cool story because a lot of people would have just said screw it. And maybe, I don't know, went to a piece of public land, or maybe not even hunted, right? Because the story of this buck actually starts way before the season even started. And it's just like the path that you took to get to this buck was kind of long and a little stressful, you know, before the story even started. And I think that's where we're going to start. But before we get there, why don't you tell everybody where you're from and what do you do for a living?
Sure. So I live in west central-ish Missouri, about an hour east of Kansas City. Married to my wife, Rebecca, and four children. So hello, Kylie, Caden, Chase, and Bennett. And I am actually a loss prevention rep for a specialty insurance company. So I travel all over Missouri, Kansas, and Iowa, working. So that's what I do for a living.
Cool. Cool. And so you're out of the Missouri, right? And that's one thing, man.
Correct.
Like, Missouri is an over-the-counter state for non-residents, right?
Yes.
Right.
Yep.
I've been thinking I need to do some scouting on some public land on the north side of the state because I hunt only about an hour from the Missouri border, maybe even closer. And I feel like one of these years, if I tag out early again, I need to go try to find some public to get it done at in Missouri.
Yeah. And I don't know a whole lot about the northern part of the state, but I think I think it's called Mark Twain. Somewhere up in the north central part of the state is a large area of public land that I've heard is awesome. I mean, most of the north part of the state is. So
right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yep. Cool. All right. So let's get this story started. And it started a while ago when you lost your main piece of property. So why did you lose your main hunting farm? How did you lose it?
So kind of started back in April and May or May of this year. And I sort of lost access, not totally, but lost access to my main farm where I killed my 2017 buck off of. Long story short, essentially, his son, was going to be hunting there and, you know, I didn't want to really intrude any more than I already was. So it was kind of a graceful bow out type of situation. But at that point I was kind of like, well, now what?
Right.
So one of my good hunting buddies, of our little group, friends who, all share the same interest and do things. And he's part of our little outdoor crew, Dead to Right Outdoors. Hi guys. He has a 40-acre farm, which most of it, is, this year it's in beans. So about 15 to maybe 20 acres is timber, but it does butt up to a large section of timber to the west. He very graciously, basically, Andy said, you know, I've never really hunted it because he's had other options and opportunities. I know there's deer there because I see him out in the field behind the house at times. You're welcome to give it a shot.
Nice.
And that's kind of where it started. So I thought, well, screw it. I'll start scouting, put some mineral out, started hanging cameras. That's sort of how it began.
Okay. So backing up just a bit, when you lost that piece of property or you quote unquote bowed out of that property so the landowner's son could hunt it, did you lose that property for a long time or is it just for this year?
I feel like probably a long time. Yeah. And then this year was kind of special because I had access, but it's going to be logged. And so I basically need to be out of there and have stands down by the time crops come out or just shortly after. So, you know, you're not going to have a whole lot of quality hunting most likely anyways, this year. And then, you know, Dan, I don't know for sure moving forward.
Right.
What will happen there. But, you know, that's kind of what happened this year. So I just kind of was like, well, no good hunting time, at least by the time it's starting to get logged. And, so that's kind of what happened there. Yeah.
Yeah. I tell you what, especially when you're a hardcore outdoorsman, right? And you've been hunting a piece of property for X number of years, whether it's 2 or whether it's 20, and that farm gets sold or you lose rights on it. It can be a moment where you're just like, oh my God, Like, you don't even know what to say. I've done that before. And that right there, a lot of guys, like I said earlier, would do a couple things, right? There's the, hey man, I don't have any place to hunt. I'm not going to knock on doors and I don't want to hunt public ground. So I'm just not going to hunt, which is the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
Or, yeah, that would take a lot for me to not do that.
Yeah, absolutely. or you do what I did when I lost my main farm back in the day, was you start knocking again. And you start knocking, right. And you knock, and you knock, and you knock till your arm hurts. And then you finally, you know, you go back there several times, and it doesn't work. Or you, I don't know. Long story short, did you get stressed out, or was the transition from that losing that main farm to your buddy saying, hey, hunt this 40, was that a short window?
Yeah. Right when it happened, yeah, of course. Because as you kind of said, I was comfortable there. That's really only place I've ever hunted for the most part, since I started hunting, and I didn't start until later in life anyway. But you know, that was pretty much, so I had gotten comfortable there.
Right.
But you know, because of the group of guys I do this with, I don't know exactly how many days, but almost immediately Andy reached out and said, hey, that sucks. You can feel free. I know it's only, you know, basically 15 to 20 acres worth of a huntable area, but there's deer there. I know that. I don't know what, but yeah. You know, so right. that definitely helped. And, my brother-in-law and myself, Russell, we also kind of started putting together a plan for another family farm that really had been left alone because it really hadn't shown much potential over the years anyways. Right. So we thought, you know what, let's give it a run. That sort of scenario. So, you know, I was upset, but it wasn't going to stop anything. I was going to be hunting one way or another.
Right.
So, started needed to make lemonade out of the lemons I was given. So,
yeah.
That, you know, it didn't last long though.
Gotcha. So that window of, oh shit, was short. You got on your buddy's property and you talked with your brother-in-law, about a family farm that you guys were going to approach. What was the first step? Once you kind of sat down and said, I have this property now and I have this property now, what was the first step to preparing for this season?
So first thing, we and I did was, it might even been before July, but we put out as many cameras as we owned, and actually Russell and I bought another few. And we thought that was probably the best first step, is to go in and kind of scout, look for what we might think would be travel areas, and just start. And like I told you, we put some mineral out in both of them and set up cameras and just started surveilling the farms, basically. To see what, if anything, shows up.
Right. Okay.
So that was the first step.
So trail cameras, right?
Mm-hmm.
First card pull of the year. I mean, did you do anything from when you set the trail cameras out to the first card pull?
No, stayed out of there.
Okay, stayed out of there.
Yep.
What did that first card pull tell you?
It was like the best Christmas I've ever had.
Yes. That such a great feeling, especially when there's so much unknown?
Yeah, for sure. Yep. So, the 40 acre farm, the one I, ended up killing him on, the first pull, I probably had a dozen different bucks on there who obviously were just still, you know, getting to go.
Right.
And you could already tell there were some big boys. So I named several. He ended up an easy one to name. I named him Basket Case, for obvious reasons, but they were there consistently. I'm talking every few days they were on the camera. So, and all the shooters were there consistently right off the bat. So okay. Got excited real quick.
Right.
So that was the first one.
All right. So first card pull shows you, hey man, you know, maybe I'm not down and out as I thought, but there's always that realization that, hey man, this is just summer pictures, right? And for anybody anybody who's run trail cameras long enough throughout the summer into the fall, you see that once the horns go hard, it's a completely different story.
And that happened to us.
Okay.
So we actually pulled cards twice before we left. We left at the end of August for our Colorado archery elk trip as a group. So 2 days before we left to Colorado, we pulled a second pull, and we had the exact same sort of showing. You know, they were showing up the same way and getting bigger and bigger and bigger, obviously. So
right.
The second pull, I got just as excited. You know, little did I know the pull after we got back from Colorado would depress me.
Right.
But
it was good. Right. I mean, that second pull, I mean, you have this brand new property that is holding good deer so far, as far as you know. Let's talk about the quality of the deer that were on this camera. Talk about size and age.
So I only named three of the deer on this property. There were more than that who were not just yearlings, but I thought they were probably just 2.5, maybe 3.5. Basket Case himself was definitely the largest. He, by the end of August or the middle of August, the last photos I had of him, he basically looked like a rectangle with legs, just a big bodied deer. I immediately noticed that he was darker than all the rest of the deer as well, which was interesting.
Yep.
Because, you know, those bucks were always with each other. He was definitely the biggest and the one I liked the most. There were two other shooters who I ended up naming Sub-Zero and Cyrax because I'm not creative enough to think of names. So I started using Mortal Kombat characters.
Hey, that's cool, dude. Do you like...
That was my jam back when I was a kid.
So you like playing Mortal Kombat?
Oh, I loved it. When I was a kid, I bet I played that game all the time.
On which ones? Like
Sega Genesis.
Sega Genesis. Do you remember? Do you remember the original Mortal Kombat?
On Sega, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure. I had them all and watched all the movies, all of it.
Do you remember the Do you remember the blood code?
Oh yeah, for sure. I had all the cheats. I was a killer.
I love that game. I don't know. Sorry. But anyway, you named your buck after Mortal Kombat characters. That's cool.
Yeah.
All right. So
Sub-Zero was definitely, he was definitely mature as well. He actually has a larger rack than Basket Case. He's a wide rack deer. And then Cyrax he's a 10 pointer, who probably 3.5, you know, maybe been older. It's just difficult to know, you know, without having much more history than I do. But so those were the three that I called shooters there.
Right.
But like I said, there were definitely more than that.
Yeah. Yeah. So there was more than what going into this season after you had those first two really good trail camera pulls, did you determine at that point what your goal was as far as an age class or antler size was?
Yeah. So, my buck last year was actually my first archery kill. He was a 10 pointer and, I'd never be more proud of a deer than I am him. But he only ended up scoring a 125. So, you know, my goal this year was to shoot a larger and older deer. And, that was my goal. And then it got exacerbated by photos.
Right.
Because then I thought, well, maybe I can pass on a 3.5-year-old. Whereas that was a goal of mine in the future, but it looks like it might be attainable this year. So that's basically what the goal I set for myself. And then from there, you know, I kind of just started thinking about my plan of action on how I was going to go about doing it. Or we were going to go about doing it. And so that's kind of, you know, some of the daydreaming in Colorado when I was napping at noon, went back to Missouri and started thinking about that as well. That's kind of where we're at there.
Cool. So leaving to go to your elk hunt, you were happy. And then the card pull after that, not so happy. What happened?
Nope. Got home. Season starts September 15th in Missouri, archery season. So went out and pulled before season, and they all disappeared. So the last photo I had of him was on August 23rd, and nothing between then and the beginning of the season. And, then I pressed a little bit when I started hunting, because my plan was to get on them early, because they were there so often. I wanted to get on them early season and get it over with. But
yeah,
that quickly went away when they weren't coming and nothing was on camera anymore except for doe.
Okay.
So that's where the, I guess you call it, the depression set in a little bit.
Right. Okay. Now that we've talked about the deer on that are on this property, I want to pivot a bit, and I want to talk about the property itself. So on this 40 acres, you mentioned that it had some timber on it that butted up to another piece of big timber, so it was somewhat good. But what other terrain features did this piece of property had that made it so attractive to these bucks?
Well, so actually, I think it ended up, you know, it's close to town, actually. So his farm, you know, if it's a big square, the northern half was the ag and the southern half was the timber. That timber is then basically cut in half by a creek, where the south half of that timber is almost all thorny locusts and thick. And the north half, is mostly hardwoods and things like that. So I think the southern half was definitely, bedding area and place for them to feel safe. The farm to the west of the property had a lot of large timber and ag. And then the east of the property was the town. So you knew the deer weren't coming from there, unless they were walking through city streets,
right?
For the most part. I mean, it was close to town. It wasn't right next to town like that. But, so I think they just felt safe, probably very low pressure over the years as well. So they felt pretty safe there and, had a lot of cover, a lot of acorns in there, that sort of stuff, which I know they're not on right off the bat, but, just a lot of easy walk. The creek goes all the way to where they need to go west, that sort of stuff.
So it sounds to me that in this 40 acres, there's food, water, cover, everything they need, right?
Yep, pretty much. Yep. And then a property really close that is his neighbor is a pond for them to drink right out of that is very secluded. So, I mean, even more water if the creek ever were dry. So
right. And the fact that there's probably some, you know, escape route / more cover on that big set of timber to the west.
Yep. Yeah, okay. They can be gone quickly.
Yep. Okay. So really everything that a whitetail needs, and then whatever low pressure there is for a whitetail to get old, right? And it looks, and that's what your trail cameras told you anyway.
That's what they look like. Yep.
Yep. All right. So they disappeared. Right. And so you said your goal was to get on them early, but now that they disappeared, did that change the strategy at all?
Yeah. So basically what I did was, I hunted hard and quick, right off the bat. And, every time I went into hunt, I pulled my card and got more discouraged. So I sat back and said, don't be stupid.
Yeah.
They'll come back. And so I disappeared out of there altogether for almost a month, a full month actually. Started hunting the other property, a little bit, and just said, be patient. They'll come back. And that's kind of what I told myself. And so that's kind of my plan changed, based on what I was seeing right off the bat.
Okay. So you made that switch to the other farm to hunt. Was this switch just to continue hunting and just be hunting and not necessarily like hunting a specific deer or any deer on that farm? It was basically, hey, I love hunting, so I'm going to go hunt, but I don't want to hunt this 40 because I know that if I do, I'm going to put too much pressure on it.
Yes and yes. So that other farm also had some lookers
okay.
on there.
Okay.
and they just weren't as consistent. It's not a farm that we think right now holds them in. There's not a lot of timber. There is a creek that borders the south end of the property that is paralleled by an old railroad. So they've basically got their own little highway right there to travel up and down. Couple pinch points that we like in there, and like I said, we did see some good ones in there as well that just weren't as consistent. And it didn't hurt that the first night I went there, I saw a shooter. So the first night I went, saw a shooter, so that helped me go, hey, maybe I'll chill here for a little while and hunt here. We just didn't want to burn it out either. So that's kind of a catch 22 on that.
Yeah, absolutely. So you saw that shooter. So then did you forget about that 40 for a little while, or did you, was it always in the back of your head? Cause sometimes what I do is I'll see a shooter and I'll just forget about the rest of the plane. I'll just attack that one and forget about everything else, hoping that, I'll go back to it if it doesn't pan out with the one I'm chasing.
Yes and no. He definitely got me excited. I don't know exactly which buck he was, if he was even one of the bucks we had on camera out there. But I forgot about it that night. But this deer I ended up killing, boy, he was the one. He was the one I wanted. He wasn't the largest of them all, but he was definitely the oldest, and his rack is just so unique, and he was the one. So he was always in my mind, wondering if he was there, that sort of stuff. Has he came back yet? I'd really love to go check the camera tonight, but I should just stay out of there, that sort of stuff. So yeah. I kept thinking about it, but I love hunting, and I was going to do it while I could somewhere else, and had a lot of good hunts at the other farm while I was waiting. So,
right. Okay, cool. Yep. So you chased that one for a night. How long before you ended up coming back to this 40 to check trail cameras to see, hey, is anything changed yet?
I didn't check the camera again until the night I killed him.
All right. So what made you want to go back to that farm to hunt? Was there certain conditions that made it favorable?
Yep. So twofold. We had a cold snap hit that week. And I've started hearing things from Andy and Micah and Russell, some of the guys part of the crew. And Andy saw two mature bucks fighting a couple days before that. Micah saw a deer chasing or a buck chasing a doe, and just seems like stuff was starting to happen. And then that particular night or that particular day, we had a southwest wind, and that is pretty much the only wind that I will hunt at that property, which makes it sort of difficult as well this time of year. And that day just happened to work out great. That I came home from St. Louis working. My second customer canceled. I got home at about 3 p.m. I checked the weather and the wind was almost perfect. It was 40 degrees. And I said, I'm going to go hunt and check the camera and see what's going on. So that's what I was looking to do. And that's why it happened that night, because of the conditions and the snap we had, and the change in the weather that week.
Gotcha. Okay, cool. All right. So let's talk about did you check the camera before the stand, before you went to the stand, or after it?
I grabbed the card and climbed.
Okay. Did you check it?
Oh yeah.
Okay. Did you check it at the camera or while you were in the tree?
No, while I was in the tree.
Okay. Yep. So you park, you go check the camera. You go to your stand, you're flipping through the pictures. What, number one, did you see any sign or any indication that there was, now some of these bucks had returned? And second, like when you finally hit that picture and you knew he was in the area, what was going through your mind?
So lots of pictures showed up. and they were towards the end. So there were some bucks showing up again, which was promising because they all disappeared. And then I got to October 11th, on the card, and Cyrax, the buck I was telling you about, the 10 pointer, he yep. shows back up.
Yep.
Then October 12th, Sub-Zero showed up, and October 13th, Basket Case shows up, and all three of them in shooting light
okay.
during shooting hours. So, you know, got excited then. And then I thought, okay, I'm going to go check the weather those days. What was the weather like? I don't necessarily remember. I remember being on October 13th, which is the day Basket Case showed back up. We actually went to the Whitetails Unlimited banquet that night, as a group.
Okay.
And talking, to one of our other, friends, Pat, asked me, you know, what's going on there. And I remember saying they're gone. They've all disappeared.
Yep.
Little did I know they had all just shown back up. And he even did that day. So, I went back and checked the weather on historical weather, some website I found, and it was between 40 and 45 degrees all three of those days. And the wind had been coming somewhere out of the south all three of those days. So the exact same conditions I was in that night. So I got cautiously optimistic really quickly, you know, about 4 o'clock or 3:30 whenever I was there. So,
were you convinced? I mean, how many days previous was it when they were in daylight?
Three.
Okay. So
three, four, and five.
Three, four, and 5 days. Then what happened? Did they go nocturnal or did they not show up on camera?
So they weren't on camera since the 13th. And remember, I killed them on the 16th. So yep. on the 14th, 15th, and 16th, there were three other bucks, all legal shooters, but none I would have taken, that also showed up. So, you know, in a 6 day span, there were six different bucks that all showed back up, along with several doe, mature does. And so nothing as far as them, but other bucks showed up. And from what I can remember, every single one of them was during shooting hours.
Cool.
So that was promising.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So we got that straightened out. You're in your stand now. And now why don't you talk us through from, you know, from after you, you know, put the card reader away or however you checked your card to the time that he showed up.
Yeah. So, you know, sat for quite a while with no movement. Got up a couple more times, honestly, and sprayed down with my scent killer, just to be extra careful. I probably go a little overboard with spraying myself down with scent killer on top of some of the other things I do. But so sat some more, no movement, but I wasn't really expecting anything before, let's say, 6 o'clock anyways. And 6 o'clock hit, and I decided, you know what? We've heard bucks fighting each other, pushing does around. I'm going to throw a little light rattle out there. No deer in the area right now, as far as I knew. So I'm just going to tickle the tines a little. So I started doing that, and not even 10 seconds into doing that, I see two deer coming directly from the west on a pretty hard trot towards me.
Right.
So I immediately stopped thinking, oh no, bucks. Well, darned if they weren't two does.
Okay.
Which I immediately was like, what is that about? But I didn't want them to peg me. So I stopped, and they hung up around 60 yards out, and I was downwind of them. So they would have never got me, and they kind of stayed out in the bean field they were going to head to. So I thought, well, that's promising. At least there's deer in the area. As soon as maybe 3 minutes after I rattled, a really small 8-pointer comes in straight to me, kind of hangs out underneath my stand, and then immediately stands at attention and starts staring straight in the distance, or the direction he came from, which was basically my west, southwest.
Gotcha.
So immediately watching him knew that there's something that he is concerned about. And at that moment, I happened to look towards the creek, and all I see is a big dark body. And I immediately said, "That's him," to myself, and I hadn't even seen a rack yet.
Right.
And he comes into the creek, starts drinking out of the water. I catch a glimpse of his rack and just said, "That's Basket Case," to myself, and never again looked at his antlers.
Okay.
Until I picked him up. So, that's the first moment I laid eyes on him. And I'll tell you, I like to keep my, I like to say I keep my cool, but boy, I felt like my heart was going to fly out of my chest.
Yeah. Been there.
Oh,
that's why we do it, man. That's why we do it.
So yeah, it was great. I even actually remember, and I still have the video. I took a video with my phone of the little buck when he came in.
Right.
And remember thinking to myself, how come it's the little ones? And then, you know, not 2 seconds after I say that to myself, immediately see him, you know, stand at attention and thought, huh, something's off. So I stopped recording and put my phone down. And that's when he walked in. So I see him, he hangs up in the creek for a minute, which is actually a good thing because it gave me time to yell at myself to calm down, you know, settle down. Also remember I had this little buck that was directly underneath me that was starting to wonder what's going on up there.
Yeah.
And, cause I was trying to get ready. As soon as I saw those doe a couple minutes before, I did grab my bow. I kind of like to err on the side of caution. So I already had my bow in my hand. I don't like to be kind of stuck, you know, up a creek without a paddle. So I already had my bow. But as Basket Case started to work his way into the clearing, I had to draw. I was either going to draw or he was going to come out of the clearing and eventually find, you know, notice me. So as he started walking out a little bit, I decided I've got to do this. So I drew my bow, and that young buck immediately spooked. And as soon as he took off, I said some choice words to myself, because I thought, well, this is over. He actually did me the biggest favor I could have ever asked. As soon as he did it, Basket Case also spooked a little bit, but he ran right into my shooting lane at 15 yards and stopped. I let it fly, and I thought I hit him great, but when he started running away, I used a lighted knock, and I knew I could see my arrow didn't pass through and was hanging out of him quite a bit. So I thought, well, what's wrong? What did I do wrong? He ran maybe 40 yards and piled up, and that was that. I hit his opposite shoulder is what happened. But
double lung, though?
Double lung, yep. He didn't make it. Like I said, he took off north and then circled back around, jumped and piled up, and he actually ended up maybe 40 yards from where I shot him, straight in my, you know, view. I pulled out the binoculars, made sure, yep, he's down. Then I started making some phone calls.
Who was your first phone call?
So my first phone call was to Andy, who is the owner of the farm.
Yep.
Who was home. He actually just texted me before I saw that I started rattling and said, "I'm going to let the dogs out if you don't mind." I said, "Sure." And so I thought he was home, and I actually called him to say, "Hey, I got him." You know, and he's got a side by side he would have brought out and helped me load him. But he didn't answer. Little did I know he ended up going to playing softball. But, so he's kicking himself cause he wished he could have been there for that. But, my second call was to my wife. I just told her, "Hey, I'm not going to be home very soon. I just shot him." So she said, "Good job, and we'll see you later." And then I called my brother-in-law, Russell, who ended up coming out and helping me drag him out of the woods and attempting to load him. That was a difficult task.
Yeah.
Then I called my other brother-in-law, Micah, who was also hunting at the time, so couldn't answer, and sends me a text message, "You shot him, didn't you?" or something like that. Because he knew about the time when I called him was about the time you're going to get those phone calls.
Yeah.
And while I was waiting on Russell, I think I called my other brother-in-law, Grant. Just there's a lot of us who love hunting, who, you know, a lot of them were the reason he was dead. I've learned a lot from them. I've learned a lot from you and Mark Kenyon, you know, the Land and Legacy guys. When I first started hunting, I didn't care about wind. I didn't care about what I smelled like. And I always wondered why I never saw anything. And when I started seriously paying attention to, you know, what I was doing, boy, it was like all of a sudden deer started showing up all the time. So
the details,
I refuse to hunt a wind that is bad. I will hunt a wind that will almost get me busted. Kind of like, I think it's you that says, you know, those winds that almost get you busted are when you kill them.
Yeah.
And that's what I was doing that night. The wind was basically coming straight out of the west. So he was cutting the wind, where he came from.
Right.
And just didn't know I was there.
Man, that's so awesome.
Yeah.
So you get out of your tree and you walk up to him, and let me just ask you this. Is this the biggest buck you've ever shot?
Yes.
Okay. So as you walk up to him, and you're now standing over him and you're looking down on him, and you know, you bend over and grab him for the first time, what was going through your head at that moment?
I honestly couldn't even believe it, Dan. It's even hard to try to explain to you in words. I didn't think I would be able to pull off a plan like that.
Right.
It was nice to put a plan in place and execute it. And it was, you know, it was terrific. My buck last year, it was during the rut and he showed up. Right. I mean, I never saw him before. So this was a totally different year, and it was something I hoped would happen, but I really had no inkling that it was going to, but I can't tell you what I felt. I was just happy. I mean, he meant a lot to me. You know, did a lot of work, not just at this farm, but our other farm, and helping other people do stuff at theirs. A lot of work this last summer getting ready for the season, and you know, it paid off in a matter of 5 minutes. So
awesome.
It was an awesome feeling.
That's awesome. So how many bucks can you kill in Missouri? One or two?
You can kill two, only one before rifle season.
Okay.
So you can kill one archery, then during rifle, you can kill another with either your rifle or bow. And if you don't do anything during rifle season, you then can use your bow again, the rest of the season. So, you can kill two.
Okay. That's cool. So basically, you know, you're tagged out now, and the rut, the Missouri rifle season starts like during the rut, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yeah, it starts on November 10th.
Okay, so
10 days long.
So are you rifle hunting, or are you going to try to get out there and do it with a bow again?
I probably will go with my bow. If we go to the other farm, just depends. There's a lot of longer shot opportunity out there. It might be hard not to take the rifle, but, you know, we all love archery hunting so much that it's almost, I don't know, it almost is, it doesn't sound fun to shoot one with my rifle, but, yeah. You know, archery hunting is what we really enjoy. We just love our bows, love shooting them. We practice all summer long at 3D shoots we go to for our elk hunt. And, you know, we do everything we possibly can to get ready, for this time of year. I mean, we even do our own fletching of arrows and our own cutting, and, you know, we've gotten into it pretty big. So it's, I don't know. It'll be hard not to take the bow.
Yeah, I hear you, man. Well, it sounds like you, on this farm, there's a couple, you know, a couple other bucks that are still running around that, you know, are still on your hit list.
Yeah, definitely. Yep, for sure.
Cool.
I haven't thought about that.
Well, hey, man, let me wish you luck the rest of the season. Congrats on a beautiful deer, and yeah, good luck, man.
So I also forgot to tell you, remember I told you I thought he was just so large?
Yeah, yeah.
Just like a rectangle on legs. He ended up weighing 250 pounds. Just a giant fat, you know, fat ass.
Yeah.
And just a, you know, he's at least five. I would say probably six, to be honest with you. But just a big boy. And if I ever get the opportunity to kill a deer with that maturity again, I'll count myself lucky. But you know, I've got something to strive for sure now. He's going to be hard to stop.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thanks for taking time to hop on the podcast, man.
All right. Thanks, bud.
And there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. We have another podcast in the books. Huge shout out to our friend Nate Thomas for hopping on and sharing that story with us. Thank you very much and congratulations. Huge shout out to all the partners of this podcast: Exodus, Wasp, Lone Wolf, Deer Lab, Prime, Ripcord, Ozonix, Hunter Safety Systems. Guys, please go out and support those companies because they support this podcast. And lastly, and most importantly, I tell you what, thanks to each and every one of you who have taken the time to download and continuously listen to this podcast. I appreciate everything that you guys do for me. It's a huge blessing, and my goal is to someday return the favor. So what else do I have to say? If you like this podcast, please go to iTunes or wherever you download your podcast and leave a review. That would help out. What else? Social media, Instagram, Facebook. Make sure you are following all of, not just mine, Nine Finger Chronicles, not just the Sportsman's Nation, but all the podcasts that are involved in the Sportsman's Nation. I can tell you we got a waterfowl podcast coming up. We're having a fishing podcast that's probably going to be coming up. I'm looking forward to sharing those as well. Other than that, I'm going to call it quits. And good luck to everybody this week and the next 2 weeks who are going to be chasing whitetails. We got the rut, right? It's coming up. It's our favorite time of year. If you're going to be in a tree, our friends at Hunter Safety Systems are reminding you to please wear your damn safety harness. Have a good week.